You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Oh, well, I think something's coming.
Welcome to The Impact, Vox's new podcast about how policy affects real people. Today, we are at Mary Center, a community health clinic in the middle of Washington, D.C. It has got lots of busy halls full of lots of busy doctors, but we wanted to see the quiet back office because we were looking for something super rare, something you really only see in American medicine these days.
Fax in the wild.
A fax machine.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you're sending?
A prescription for a pharmacy.
This is Abigail Chicas-Husero, but she goes by Avi, and she's a medical assistant at Mary's. She is super bubbly and friendly, and she had these amazing cat-in-the-hat scrubs.
I love cat-in-the-hat. Dr. Seuss is right on.
She agreed to show us the ins and outs of the Mary Center fax machine.
So now we're going to put our fax number in, and then you just press send, and it goes off.
Except it doesn't. Avi starts pressing buttons. She's trying to figure out why. And it turns out the machine is busy.
We're receiving something that is at 26 pages, so it's going to take a while.
Avi doesn't just send faxes out. She spends so much time asking hospitals and doctors to send her records. That means calling them and hoping someone picks up.
But most times, you know, you go to voicemail and you just leave a message to please give me a call back as soon as possible and just pray that they sent it over right away.
When the faxes do come, sometimes they're blurry and she has to start the entire process all over again. And sometimes the faxes just don't show up at all. So Avi has this big blue folder, it's about 2 inches wide, where she keeps all the records she is still following up on.
Like this one, right?
They date back to 2014, and she has notes scribbled on every request. She has the date she sent it out and the date she followed up.
This one, you started in April, and you didn't finish until
the end of May.
Avi estimates that 80% of the faxes she sends need some kind of human intervention. And it's been this way since she started working in medicine a decade ago. Even back then, she was so surprised that faxes played a big role in her day-to-day.
It's somewhat inconvenient for these, you know, this time and age now that I hope there would be, like, something faster. But it is what it is.
But why is it the way things are? Because this is not just Mary Center. One private firm we talked to estimates that most medical records are still sent by fax. They think there are actually billions of healthcare faxes every year. And all those faxes, they are tedious for someone like Avi, but they can also be dangerous for patients. I became obsessed with fax machines in medicine about a year ago. I was trying to pick up a copy of an MRI I'd had on my foot for a pretty small stress fracture. The radiology facility could only provide it by fax, not email, not anything else. It was 2016. Of course I didn't have a fax machine. And this was just my minor foot injury. For more serious medical issues, you really want to make sure that the medical system communicates as efficiently as possible. So why in the world are doctors and hospitals still using so many fax machines? I did a bunch of digging, and I discovered a plan. A plan to kill the fax machine using policy. On this episode of The Impact, I will tell you the story of that plan. I'll speak to the people who helped shape it and the people who live with it now. And then I'll explain the fatal flaw in the plan. The flaw that turned the fax machine into the cockroach of American medicine. This clunky, inefficient thing in the corner of every office. A thing that doctors hate and nurses hate, but a thing that refuses to die. Let's get one thing out of the way right at the top. When I first started bringing up doctors using fax and tweeting out questions about it, I kept hearing the same answer. Oh, it's a HIPAA thing. You might know HIPAA. It is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. It is the law that keeps patient records private. Faxes are approved as a secure way to send private information. Normal email, like my Gmail account, is not. But most doctors, they do have access to secure HIPAA-approved email. And it is not like fax machines are this super secure technology to begin with.
If you think about the fax, how do I know it's you that it's going to and only you can open it? And how do you know that it's me who's sending it?
This is Farzad Mostashari. He used to be a doctor in Brooklyn. And he remembers faxes accidentally getting sent to his home instead of his office.
And I'm like, please, this is a massive HIPAA violation. Stop sending patient records by fax to my home number.
Farzad and I have met a few times at this point, and the thing that sticks out to me is he always wears a bow tie.
So how many do you own? I've always been curious.
Probably 100.
Wow.
There's one that is my favorite, which is a shoe with a hole in it. I love the connotation of service and public health and just like doing the damn work.
Farzad eventually left private practice to do the damn work at the New York City Health Department. This was back in 2005, when most doctors were still scribbling notes on paper and stashing those away in files. Farzad got interested in this new tool, something called an electronic health record. Doctors could fill out patient information on the computer. They could search their files instead of looking for that scribbled note somewhere in a filing cabinet. They could send those files around. This is why Farzad's team wanted doctors in New York to start using electronic records.
And we did it. And that was the shoe leather part. Like, we went to 200 private practices in New York City's toughest, poorest neighborhoods, and we got half of all primary care docs in those neighborhoods to adopt this crazy thing called an electronic health record.
It worked out really well for New York City. So Farzad started thinking, why stop there? This could be great for everyone in the United States.
If Congress spent $30 billion, we could wire up every primary care doctor in America. And lo and behold, there's $30 billion. And I was like, I'll help.
This was 2009, and those $30 billion came from something called the High Tech Act. It was a small part of a massive stimulus bill. And President Obama, he hoped all this money would pull the country out of a terrible recession.
Saving money by putting patient records online. The government promises billions of dollars in stimulus money and potential health care legislation money to make that happen.
It's about, $35 billion that the Obama administration got into the High Tech Act.
Farzad left New York. He came down to D.C. and he joined the federal government. He showed up with a mission.
We actually set out to kill the fax, quite explicitly.
His team thought, okay, once everyone has an electronic health record, they will use it to communicate. It's faster. It's better. Obviously, doctors will stop using the fax machine, just like they stopped using floppy disks.
We thought that if we just built the better mousetrap, then you know, people would naturally go to that.
Well, they'll have this tool. Like, now they'll exchange records.
Absolutely.
This way.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
So this might sound totally weird to you, but when I heard Farzad talk, I started thinking about the movie Field of Dreams. Particularly that scene where Kevin Costner is wandering through a cornfield and he starts hearing this voice whispering.
If you build it,
Kevin Costner builds a baseball diamond. It's such a happy ending. Everyone shows up. What a heartwarming baseball movie. Farzad and his team were wandering through the cornfield of American medicine, and they're whispering to themselves, if you build electronic records, people will use them to communicate instead of the fax. Farzad and his team knew it would be really expensive to convert decades of paper files into digital records, but they thought, this is fine. We have $30 billion to spend from the High Tech Act. We'll give that to doctors as a reward for going digital. And that part of their plan, it totally worked.
The metric that we had was what percent of primary care doctors are using electronic health records and what percent of hospitals. And by that token, it's been, you know, smashing success. If we went from, you know, 9% to 90% in a period of 4 or 5 years. That just doesn't happen in healthcare.
So this was great. Electronic health records became standard across the country. Most doctors, they got rid of their paper files. And yet, the fax is not dead. It is super alive. It is sending billions of faxes. This seems weird. It's like if the government helped people get an email account in the early 2000s, and everyone said, you know what? I think I'll just keep using the mail. But it turns out there is an explanation, and it is the fatal flaw in Farzad's plan, the flaw that turned the fax into an undead cockroach. More on that after the break.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Welcome back to The Impact. When we left off, Farzad and his merry band of health wonks had convinced doctors all across the country to switch to electronic records, as Farzad puts it.
We thought that we jumpstart things and then people are off and going.
But there was a flaw in the plan to kill fax machines. It didn't recognize that American healthcare is full of competing businesses who guard their information incredibly closely. Like the companies that make electronic health records. They are businesses and they are fighting tooth and nail for every last customer. A few weeks ago, we visited a small OBGYN practice in Virginia where we saw one of these fights playing out. It's a place called the Arlington Women's Center.
I've always been interested in women's health, and childbirth is an amazing process.
Amanda Roan is a doctor at this practice. She has a small office that is clean and quiet. It does not seem like a fight scene at all. But the first clue that something weird is going on, it comes when she shows us her fax folder. She has a pink one.
And it contains, thankfully today, only one fax of someone's prenatal ultrasound that was done downstairs in our hospital.
It's like literally a few floors down from us.
Yes.
And this was sent to you by fax? Or
yes.
Or maybe brought up here? Or
it was sent by fax.
Why on earth are they sending faxes between different floors of the same building? Why not send them on an electronic record? It turns out they just can't. Amanda's clinic uses one brand of electronic record, and the hospital that owns her office space, it uses a different brand.
So the systems are not directly connected.
Wow. Sorry, I'm just like processing for a moment.
In theory, Amanda's system is supposed to be able to communicate with the hospital system. But in practice, it doesn't. We can't be absolutely sure why these records don't talk to each other. But here's the most likely reason. These records are fighting for customers. That is what Farzad thinks.
Not that there's some, you know, conspiracy going on, but just like, look how awesome it is. You come into this beautiful garden. You know, there's a huge advantage to being within this network.
Each electronic medical record is its own beautiful, gorgeous garden, but they all have high walls. And if you, like Amanda, you're standing on the outside of one of those walls, you can't communicate with the people inside very easily. Because it is so hard to communicate, Amanda's clinic is looking over the wall of that garden and thinking, it looks really nice over there. Recently, they decided to quit their electronic record and switch to the big electronic record that their hospital wants to use.
It's a big undertaking, but we are actually planning to switch because once we're the same as the hospital, that'll cut down on a lot of the paper merry-go-round.
I told Farzad this.
The office I was actually thinking of, they are switching in 2019.
It worked!
It worked.
A company won Amanda's business by making it hard to talk to other records. Instead of communication becoming faster and smoother, these companies have huge incentives to work against each other. They benefit when communication isn't easy. But Farzad and his team, they weren't thinking about this when they set up their fax-killing plan. They did have a provision that said your electronic record has to be able to communicate with other records, but they didn't think to specify communicate easily or communicate consistently. And the other thing that Farzad and his team missed, they didn't think about another kind of healthcare competition, competition between clinics.
When you want competing entities to share information, you have to realize that they're sharing things that could help their competitors.
This is David Blumenthal. He also worked on health IT for the Obama administration.
We don't expect Amazon and Walmart to share background on their consumers, but we do expect competing hospital systems down the block from one another, fiercely competing for the same patient populations, to readily share the information they have on their customers.
Here in DC, there are 9 different hospital systems, and they are all trying to woo the exact same patients. If you think about them as Amazons or Walmarts, then yeah, it is a little weird to assume they would just open up their records. They would just let competitors pull up any customer information they want. It all boils down to business.
We talk a great deal about the importance of the private sector and competition and choice as the key principles by which our healthcare system should operate. Well, that's a philosophy with a lot of believers, but it has implications.
It has implications for patients. When healthcare data can't travel easily, when our doctors can't access our records, we get worse care. For example, Right at the beginning, we talked about Mary's Clinic, the place that Avi works. It serves mostly immigrants in the D.C. area. There are lots of Spanish-speaking patients in the waiting area. Dana Mueller is a doctor there, and she told us that a lot of her patients get paid by the hour.
So to come to the doctor, they're taking usually a couple of hours off, which means lost income.
Dana wants to make sure that every visit counts. But there are certain tests they can't do in a primary care clinic, so she sends people to the hospital or a lab. Avi, the medical assistant, she'll do her best to make sure the results are faxed in by the time that the patient comes back for a follow-up.
But if those results aren't ready, you know, when they come in, if we can't do the next step of their care because the results aren't available to us, that's really frustrating for both of us.
Frustration seems to be the theme there. Often, Avi's requests for test results will wind up in her fat blue folder. And it's only after weeks of phone calls and badgering, following up on that waiting request, that the facts will finally come through.
We might call the patient and say, don't bother coming in. You know, don't skip work today. Don't take time off. You know, don't find a daycare.
Then Dana has to figure out how to reschedule the appointment. She is a very busy doctor with a packed calendar. Sometimes she doesn't have a free slot for another month.
So instead of putting somebody a month out, we use a spot that's supposed to be reserved for somebody who's acutely ill to repeat this appointment.
And if a person who is acutely ill comes in, maybe one of Dana's regular patients who she could treat, there might not be space for that person in the schedule. They might go to the emergency room instead, where they'll have a long wait time and a big bill. This will happen hundreds of thousands of times all across the country, just because our healthcare systems won't talk to each other. When we interviewed Avi, the medical assistant, we asked her what sort of things she would do if she didn't have to spend so many hours sending faxes.
Oh my God. I would be able to, you know, do more chart reviews. I would be able to stock my rooms.
Avi has like a laundry list, and she was super clear.
It would be a more productive day if I didn't have the fax to worry about.
You have such a like dreamy look.
Yes. It would be a dream come true.
What's so frustrating is there is an electronic health record at Mary's Center. Avi should be able to use it instead of the fax. But despite those billions of dollars of federal incentives, it still doesn't talk to the hospitals and the doctors and the labs that Avi wants to reach. So what comes next? How can we make Avi's fax-free dream come true? Farzad came away from his time in Washington thinking that killing the fax would require more government intervention. He thinks if we're ever going to get rid of it, it needs to be outlawed.
If we're going to kill the fax, we need to schedule the funeral.
The Trump administration has a pretty different take. The president recently appointed a physician named Donald Rucker to take Farzad's old job. Donald wants to make sure that doctors can send records to any hospital or any office. But unlike Farzad, he doesn't want to ban the fax. He thinks we need fewer mandates.
We've built up this very paternalistic healthcare system and all of the thousands and thousands of regulations that have been piled on.
Donald is okay with some regulations, like more penalties for anyone who blocks the sharing of information. But at the end of the day, he thinks we should turn things over to the private market. That we'll get better design records if government just gets out of the way.
There are markets, there are entrepreneurs, there are venture capital firms, and they will address this. And so what format? Your guess is as good as mine. You know, start the company, tell me.
Spoiler alert, I am not launching an electronic record company. I'm a very happy podcast host. But Donald's point was super clear. He really wants to lean into the business of healthcare to solve this problem. Farzad and David, they think the business side of healthcare is what got us into this mess in the first place. And after reporting this story, I'm pretty sympathetic to their case. It is so hard to see hospitals singing kumbaya, just sending medical records to their direct competitors. We saw that government incentives, they worked to get doctors to adopt electronic records. There just weren't any incentives to have those records talk to each other. And until there are, Avi is probably going to spend hours and hours and hours more sending faxes. But hey, a girl can always dream of a sunny, bright, faxless future. That was the third episode of The Impact. Thank you so much for listening. Our producer is Bird Pinkerton. Our editor is Amy Drozdowska. Our senior producer is Jillian Weinberger. And our theme music is composed by Miles Ewell. We had engineering help from Peter Leonard. The Impact was co-created by myself and Liz Sheltons. You can reach us at impact@vox.com. We would love to hear what you think of this episode, of past episodes, of what we should make our second season about. Send us an email at impact@vox.com. Next time on The Impact, a story about doctors trying to do their best.
We're out there to help people, not to cause them harm.
The misinformation that led them astray.
This entire, you know, messaging was based on zero science, not a single study.
And how policy choices helped create America's opioid epidemic.